part three of The Buzz Bubble with Chuck Porter of Crispin, Porter, and Bogusky. Now back to our host, Kevin Kelly, on The Buzz Bubble.
So, you mentioned Facebook. Regarding social media, I heard you say, I'm old and grown up and have enough friends.
When did I say that?
You never know what you find on YouTube.
Apparently not.
But personal aside, you know, any commentary on, you know, what you think of it and what it's done to media?
It's an amazing thing. You know, it's the way, I mean, I have a son who's 23 and it's the way he communicates, you know, and it's like, and I'm not interested because I don't want to spend that much time. First of all, I do have enough friends, you know what I mean? I'm not looking to make more friends, number one. But also, you know, years ago, a guy in the agency came to me and said, you know, you got to start blogging. You need to start writing blogs because, you know, people will be interested in what you have to say and you got to start doing blogs. And I'm like, okay, I will do that. Who will pay me to write this? Because I get paid to write, right? And they're like, no, you don't get paid. And I'm like, well, I'm not really interested in that, you know, because I come from a very old thing where if I'm going to write, you know, I think that it is not a world that I live in, but it's clearly a world that's changing the way most people deal with life. And you know, luckily for me, the average age of people around here is about 26. So, you know, they're all deeply, well entrenched in it. I just don't happen to be, you know, I had a Facebook page for probably about a week and I got, I think, 800 resumes, you know, and I said, okay, I don't really want to do this anymore. So, and I know that there are ways that you can put in passwords and stuff,
but really what it's about.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not an active participant, but I can appreciate it and I can appreciate it. You know, it's quite an amazing thing that we, for the first time in 100 years, live in a read-write world again, you know, where we're no longer announcing to people, we're having a conversation with them, and it's a great thing. It's gonna be very great for storytellers. And I think that the people who can tell the best stories are gonna thrive even more in this environment. Because you can't just interrupt people and solve stuff anymore. You know, it used to be, you could put a spot on television and scream at people about 40% off, and I just think that now, technology allows them to tune you out, and they will. So I think that people who can carry on a great conversation and tell a great story, that's what it's about.
Yeah, I mean, content is so much more important than it has been
so much more,
for years,
yes.
You know, and good content and volumes of content, you know. And
volumes, people, yeah, volumes. Content, it's crazy.
You have to have something to say. Well, a lot of people have something to say. It's not worth listening to.
Well, I mean, I think,
you, make sure it
you know, I what I really think is happening is I think that the sort of the marketing communications, what we used to call advertising, I think that world is really sort of bifurcating. Keep in bifurcating, because it's the smartest word I'm going to say.
I'm
anyway.
I'm actually going to put up on the screen a little.
Bifurcating. I think it is, and I think that there is one, you know, there's one school that's going to be, okay, you sell pork chops for $2.99 a pound. What we're going to specialize in is finding people who want pork chops. And that's going to be the science of advertising. And that's going to be like direct mail used to be, where they're going to become experts at getting you in front of this audience who wants to buy your product today. And then the other school is going to be, we're going to tell a story about your brand that's so engaging that people are going to want to make it a part of their life. And that's obviously the place where we're going to live. Right. But they're both equally valid, I think.
You mentioned the interruptive technique that was around for so many years. You know, there's so many agencies that still seem to be making the interruptive model the centerpiece of their campaigns.
Not all TV commercials work simply because they're interruptive. A lot of TV commercials work because they're engaging and people like them. And people, you know, when we did a thing for Domino's where when they sort of redid their recipe or their pizzas,
right.
And we said, look at, you know, if we're going to do this, it's a great thing to do because it's not very good and everyone knows that. It's not a high. So if you're going to redo it, rather than saying, hey, introducing the new improved or da-da-da, you got to come on and say, we didn't used to be that good. And we heard you, you know, because it's transparent and because people will believe you then. You know, new and improved is the oldest news in the world.
Yeah.
But to go on and say, you know, you told us our pizza wasn't very good, so we fixed it for you. And when they did that, it was an amazing thing. We were online and people were blogging about it and stuff, but it wasn't until we ran the TV spots that it really exploded. Because TV is still the cheapest way to reach the most number of people. So,
but it was more, yeah, I remember that. It was more like a public service announcement, not a here we are, we've arrived.
Well, yeah,
but you were saying we know that we weren't so good, and you told us, and we heard you, and here we go.
The fact that you remember that broadcast, I guarantee you, you saw that week 3,000 commercials. And the fact that you even remember one of them is not a bad thing.
Yeah, so. Good stuff. Great Chuck quotes. When we were small and didn't have huge budgets, we cheated and used imagination. That was something I heard you say. And now that you're all grown up and have huge budgets, where does imagination sit today?
It's gone. We don't need it anymore. We got all the money we need, so we don't really need it.
That was the answer I was hoping for.
I think because we grew up that way, it became a part of our culture.
Yeah.
I think we were very lucky.
That's evident.
Because, well, when we had little budgets back 20 years ago, we had to learn ways to, because we could never compete with a media spend, we had to learn ways to, like I said, cheat and to figure out ways to stretch dollars, use media in different ways and make it more imaginative. And they called it guerrilla marketing at the time.
Right.
You know, when you do, it was called guerrilla marketing. And just at the time we got good at it, clients started to want to buy it. So it was fortuitous for us. But I think we kind of still think that way. And I think we still say to people, you know, I mean, I've heard creatives say, look, I can't make this commercial. I've only got $1.25 million. And I forced them to watch commercials that we made for $40,000 that won Lions at Cannes.
Right.
And I said, if you can't do this, you really don't belong
in the business. On that note, you know, the getting clients' trust and just letting them, you know, let you do your job and help them. Do they know when they come to CPB that there's got to be a little letting go? You know, when you go to pitch or you pick, I don't know if you how you pitch or you know, how you find the right fit. Do they know they have to let go a little bit and you've really got to trust us and they come
here?
Well,
I think so. I mean, I think that, you know, I think most of the clients who come here, they know what we build and they come here because that's what they want to buy, you know.
Right.
That's not always true, but it's mostly true. But I think that I don't think any client trusts any agency very explicitly or very thoroughly when they first start out, even if it's a conservative agency, no matter who it is. You know, I think that you have to have one win. You know, you have to have one, you have to be able to get something produced that explodes in the marketplace. That's what creates trust, you know?
Right, right.
And I think that, and that's been virtually true of every client that I can think of, you know? I mean, we got Microsoft. Microsoft is pretty conservative, you know? And we broke a campaign with Bill Gates and Jerry Seinfeld,
right?
You know, and we said,
sure, I remember
this,
that.
You know, what this is going to do is, you know, make you, give you more of a personality and make you more human and do this. And they measured all those attributes and they know how to measure.
Yeah.
And we were right. It did that, you know. It doubled the number of people who said, I like Microsoft. It doubled it, you know.
Wow.
So we had that sort of success and now they trust us more, you know. So I think you need one hit. And if you have a disaster up front, it's really hard to recover, you know. So the first campaign is really important.
Excellent. Now you can wave this off if you'd like, but you know, there's so much hoopla surrounding the whole Burger King thing. And,
yeah, I'm waving it off. No, okay. I'm only kidding.
You know, people love to add controversy to everything, but you know, what an amazing run. It was one of the things that brought me to you guys as a huge fan of CPB is what you did way back when with the Hootie and the Blowfish and the, you know, that commercial that with Brooke Burke and a swing. It was just amazing and breasts growing on trees. So, you know, anything to comment on or the status of that? And it's just that people love the controversy.
I think for us, Burger King was a great success story. You know, I mean, it was, we had them. I remember when we got Burger King that there were friends of mine in New York in the advertising business were like, because I think that the agency before, I mean, I think that they'd had like 4 agencies in 3 years or something like that. It was not regarded as a very solid account, right? And also the company was in really dire straits. They had franchisees bankrupting every week. It was a mess.
Wow.
And so when they came, my friends in New York were like having like pools on how long will these guys keep this. And I think the average was about 6 months was a consensus. And we had it for 8 years. And we, you know, we performed through three different management groups.
Wow.
You know, they took it private and they took it public again. And wow. Everybody got rich. We made some money. I don't think we got as rich as most of the investors. But it was a spectacular success story.
It really was.
And this fourth management group who came in, they have their sort of priorities are different right now. They need to spend a lot of money on the stores and some other things. I think marketing is going to become less of a critical aspect of their business, at least for a time. So it was okay. It was like, you know, it was a great run. We did it for 8 years, which is, you know, about three times as long as most accounts.
That's
last.
True.
And
yeah.
And it was terrific. And we
really
learned
was.
A lot. And, you know, we did some great work for them. So I certainly consider it a success, you know.
Absolutely. Same here.
And we'll probably do another one down the road.
And you still hold the credo, we don't, when it goes in review, we don't re-pitch accounts, really.
I think that, you know, I don't know that it's a rule. We don't really have any rules.
That's true. You said that earlier.
Yeah.
So I got to start paying attention.
But I think generally speaking, if an account goes in review, it's kind of a no-win situation because obviously they're unhappy. And if you do participate in the review and blow their socks off, if I were them, I'd say, well, where was that 6 months ago? So it's... we typically don't do it, yeah.
Something we don't get to talk about that often is women in the agency business. You have some key players at the top here with Heather and Laura.
Heather Font, yeah. Laura Bowles, both partners in the agency.
Any comments on you personally and your agency and what you see in the business? It's just, seems like there's, it's still such a male-dominated industry.
It is, yeah. It is, and I think that there's a whole bunch of reasons for that. Here's what I think. I have two daughters and a son, right? And what I learned from that is that women are smarter, more mature, and basically better in every way than men are. Okay, that's just my point of view. So, you know, and the women that you just talked about, Laura and Heather, are two of the smartest, most productive people in the agency. Tiffany Rolfe, who is one of our senior creative directors, is you know, she's like one of the, I don't know, 10 women to watch in advertising or whatever. We have some great women. I would love to have more. Why we don't, I don't know. I mean, I think why the industry doesn't, I don't really know. I think it's partly because a lot of women, no matter how smart or how capable or even how driven, generally at some point in their life want to go have kids. And that changes, you know, changes things. But I have never, ever in my life in the advertising business with any client or really any agent that I can think of, have ever seen any bias against women, you know? I think we will take all the brilliant women we can get.
In fact, we've
actually done things here. We've restructured the agency because we've had so many great women who come here and then they're gonna have a family. So, you know, they were running whatever account they were running. They have to get on an airplane every week. They don't want to do that anymore. So we make a job for them. You know, we put them in charge of HR. We put them, because
right.
they're too smart and too good to lose.
Like, right.
So,
right.
you know, we're pretty full. I mean, Sarah Jeanette started out as my assistant years and years ago. She rose to become our head of broadcast production.
Wow.
Which is a crazy busy job, right? Yeah. And you're shooting in LA and London and do. And then she had kids. And she said, I can't do this anymore. I cannot be getting on an airplane every week. So we made her director of business affairs, which is what she is now. So we
That's
try
great.
And
That's
find terrific. Ways to keep good people.
Terrific.
That's it for part three with Chuck Porter of CPB. Tune in next week for part four.
You know, I mean, I miss Alex a lot. He and I were partners for 20 years, and we're also good friends, you know. And Alex is a brilliant creative guy. So we miss him, you know. You miss whenever a brilliant creative guy leaves, you know, you miss that
sure.
thinking and that contribution.
Next week on The Buzz Bubble.